Afternoon. Thanks everyone for coming after lunch, surviving the long lines. And I'm really happy to be here today to talk to you about this project. So I'm going to share information about a project that we conducted with colleagues from CARE, from SEDPA, and from ASDAC, which is a local organization in Mali, funded by USAID. I have no relationships to disclose. And I want to talk a little bit about the purpose of the project. So what we're really trying to do with this project is address unmet need for family planning. So as many of you know, there's been a lot of investment in family planning in West Africa. So this slide shows over 20 years of investment in Mali. And over that time, unmet need has increased from 26 to 31%. There is very high knowledge of modern methods and pretty low modern contraceptive prevalent use, 6%, and desired fertility has stayed the same. So the purpose of our project is to see if we can use a social network approach to really make a difference in terms of unmet need for family planning in West Africa. So we started off doing formative research to answer some of these questions. So why are women and men who supposedly have unmet need for family planning not using contraceptive method? And is it possible to address some of the social factors in order to make a difference and make a more enabling environment for men and women? And what are some ways that we can address those factors? So today I'll be sharing information from our formative, our ethnographic research. This morning I shared some information from our social mapping of the villages and the communities there. So to start out, let me talk a little bit about social network analysis. So what is it and how is it different? It really looks at it's a theoretical perspective that looks at the relationships between people rather than the individual properties of people. So it really understands that individuals learn from, they interact with, they're influenced by the people around them, and they're not making decisions in an isolated manner. So why is a social network focus important? You know, social networks can influence belief and attitudes and behaviors around fertility in a number of ways. So we have the social ecological model here on the slide to remind you of how all the different levels of the social ecology are important. But a few examples. So when a woman marries in Mali, for example, her reproductive rights are transferred to her husband's family. She now is a part of this larger social system. It's no longer her decision alone to decide whether or not to use family planning or how many children she wants to have. Another way that a social network can influence are the social costs of having and raising children. If you're sharing the costs of your children among a wide family, your co-wives, your mother-in-law, it's different from if you're trying to take care of them yourself. And plus, children represent a really important support for your social network, or your lineage, or your clan. So those are some of the ways that why social network focus is really important for family planning. And I think that a lot of work in West Africa and other parts of the world have really focused on the woman as an individual, which is a little bit more appropriate maybe for a U.S. setting, and not really recognize the way that women are embedded in these social networks. Let's see. So our research was exploring these different issues, social norms, the meaning and value of fertility, and diffusion of information. Because in essence, what we're trying to do with this project is reach the tipping point. There's very few family planning users in the villages we're working with, and we're trying to diffuse the family planning positive ideas and information to reach more people so that we can create a more enabling environment for family planning. So just to quickly, research took place in two villages, Kutialo and Bandiagara. So Kutialo was much more favorable to family planning. It had higher contraceptive prevalence, although it was still quite low. Higher unmet need, and it's two different ethnic groups, Kutialo's Minianka and Bandiagara's Dogon. They're both patrilocal communities and a slightly different economic systems. So we wanted to do this research in two slightly different areas that were representative of the region that we were going to be implementing our intervention in. So to give you a little bit of an overview of the research methods, we had a community checklist to talk with chiefs and leaders to map the village, find out what kind of associations were there. Then we did some focus groups with three groups of women and three groups of men in each village to find out some of the information that I mentioned before on the previous slide, cultural norms and meanings. We then also did in-depth interviews with 32 women and 8 men in each village, divided by users and non-users. And we were trying to figure out, really compare the users and the non-users and see where the differences were and where we could kind of proceed in terms of developing an intervention that would catalyze discussion and questioning about social norms. Then we did 8 in-depth interviews with leaders. We also did qualitative social mapping. So this morning I talked about the quantitative social mapping. We did this whole phase first. So the qualitative social mapping was done in a group with cards and pictures, and here you can see some of the output. And we also did network analysis through pile sorting. So people did pile sorting to identify their social networks. The results of all this information was used to design a household census and a network analysis phase, where we understood better how people talk about their social networks, how they talk about family planning and fertility, and we were then able to design a quantitative portion of the analysis. It was also designed, however, it was also used to develop our intervention and to understand better what was going on so we could develop materials. So I'll share today some of the qualitative results that we're using in the material development. So who's very influential in spreading information? You can see here you have the men, you have the community leaders, and of course the female kin and friends. So women have a broad network around them who can share information, ideas, and influence with. Groups and organizations, which ones are influential? So which are the informal social networks you can work with? So we have groups and different organizations. Informal groups called GRINs, Savings and Loans, which are the Tontines, agricultural groups. You can see a quote here, why some groups don't really wish to talk about family planning. If we discuss family planning, it might break up, because men will say, the purpose of this group is no longer to work, but to change women's ideas. So some of the complications about working with networks. Another man who talked about why they wouldn't talk about family planning in his religious group, it's shameful to discuss family planning. I've never invited health workers here to discuss it. I don't think it's compatible with the spiritual norms of my brotherhood. So this is a fundamentalist Islamic group. So where do people congregate and where do they share information? So you can see all the different places on the slide. And one thing was struck by us is how much information exchange is done in informal settings. So for example, a woman says, walking to and from the field provides an opportunity to discuss family planning, especially as pregnant women cannot work and they were in charge of leading the donkey. We continued our chats in the evening and during the day when we were pounding millet. So it gives you a sense of the kind of opportunities that women have and men have also to share information, compare, and learn from each other. So there's two really important processes through which diffusion occurs through social networks: social learning and social influence. Social learning is basically, you know, how you learn from each other. You exchange ideas and you evaluate information. So, you know, Betty's using family planning, and she's just like me, so I should use it also, you know. And or social influence, you know, Victoria's frowning on me because I'm using it, and I really value her opinion, so maybe I shouldn't use it. So two different mechanisms that we have to take into account: social learning and social influence. So social learning, here's a few quotes that illustrate that process of learning from people like you. It's my sister-in-law who oriented me towards family planning. She encouraged me to use it during our conversations. I, in turn, try to sensitize my co-wife and my other sisters-in-law about the benefits of family planning. Or a man who says, there's not one single person in any of my networks who can give me positive information on family planning. They're all against it. So it shows you the kind of social learning processes here. So social influence. I don't discuss family planning with anyone because it's a subject that I'm ashamed of. So the woman who uses family planning. Or a man, I don't know what my wife thinks about family planning because we've never talked about it in our culture. Men and women should not talk about these things. That's the reason why I've never discussed it. A positive one. One day in the market, my mother said, you must find a way to space their births because I can no longer support you having all these children. That's what really encouraged me to use. I just hadn't taken the radio messages seriously before. So obviously, just hearing about it on the radio is not enough. You need these different kinds of information. So similar networks play different roles in high and low prevalence settings. So if you look at a very large and dense network with a low prevalence of family planning, what you're going to get is a lot of reinforcing of negative messages. Because it's a tight community, there's negative messages flowing around. In larger networks, you know, with more open communication, that can be more positive towards, if there's acceptance of family planning, it can really catalyze family planning use. So it's useful to think about the kinds of settings you're working in. Are they high density, low density networks, and what kind of attitudes are flowing in those networks so that you can tailor your interventions to meet those. So social networks matter. We found that out because they filter conflicting information. You know, one of the activities we did is they had women draw a map and manage a map of the community and mark where there was positive and negative information. So they had a well, for example. They marked positive and negative information. So they're getting both kinds of information about family planning at this one place. But they have to decide who to believe and who to trust and what information makes sense for them given who they are and what their situation is. So social networks typically like reinforce information that people are already inclined to believe. Positive messages are reinforced and then negative messages can be consolidated through those networks as well. So another finding is that gender and age grade are really important. So age hierarchies are critical. Young people can't raise the topic with their elders. Men should broach the subject first. And women don't bring up the subject if they think their husbands are not in agreement. It's just too risky for them. One of the things we found is that there is actually a lot more support for family planning than men and women believe. It's just hidden because there's a lot of stigma attached to it. People don't talk about it. Men don't know what their wives think. So one of our goals with our intervention is to catalyze information, to get that information flowing, you know, through the pipes, which is we consider the social network the pipes. And then our job is to make sure there's, you know, good water flowing through those pipes to get to all the different parts of the social network. And gendered support. So there's a lot more support than you might expect for family planning. Typically, people believe that, or the literature says that co-wives, mother-in-laws are very opposed to family planning in a pronatalist society. But that's not always true because, as I mentioned earlier, resources are shared within a family, and it helps sometimes, you know, if there's only a small pot of resources and there's a lot of kids and co-wives, you know, you really want to share them in an effective way among the family. So a quote from a woman about her co-wife. Even if my first co-wife discovered that I was using family planning secretly, she would never tell anyone. Why would she help you hide it, asked the interviewer. Because she helps me bring up my children, and if I had a closely spaced pregnancy, it would be she who would have to look after the child. Another one, my co-wife said that using family planning really helps her. She had closely spaced births, but now her children are spaced and she feels free. We talk about it under the shady area in our compound. I like family planning, but the fact that she's using it really encouraged me to use it as well. And then a last quote, I talk about family planning with my sisters-in-law. We often chat after dinner. Not one of us uses, but we all see its advantages. In one of our conversations, my sister-in-law said, let's all take the pill so we can have sex without fear. According to her, you can have sex every night without fear of becoming pregnant. We women eat alone, so we're not embarrassed to talk like that. So an example of a female network. So right now we're in the intervention phase, so we're developing an intervention, and the theme of the intervention is called, in English it's called Approval is There, Choose Together. So what we found is that there is a lot of underlying approval for family planning in these communities, but it's very hidden. There's a lot of stigma around use, and that choice is not only a woman. You know, she makes a choice with her husband, with her family, with her mother-in-law, with her God, with her religious leaders. So since there is underlying acceptance and belief in the benefits of family planning, you know, how can we catalyze that and mobilize that to help to diffuse these ideas of family planning? So what we've found is that if you really keep thinking about women as an isolated individual who makes these decisions on her own, you're really not empowering her because you're not helping her to use these social networks that surround her that she can use, that can be supportive of her, and that provide her resources. And so that's really the goal. We're developing interventions that can be rolled out through existing networks that are stories, activities, that really can catalyze some critical reflection and discussion that women can then, and men can then take out to their networks to diffuse this more broadly, to hopefully help us reach a tipping point where family planning becomes more positive and there becomes a more enabling environment for family planning. So that's it. Thank you very much. And my colleagues here, not all of them could be here, and Sarah Castle, some of you know, is our anthropologist in Mali who worked with us on this.